You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. Saturday, October 1st. This year's gone by so fast. So fast. Eddie, you can remember that cold day at the end of February when me and you and Keith and some supporters in this area went into that airplane hangar in Millington, Tennessee, and we had press credentials for the Donald Trump rally there. Of course, 2 days after that, I believe it was, we interviewed on with Sam Bushman, Donald Trump Jr. That seems like that was yesterday. That was, again, the end of February, and then Super Tuesday, March 1st. That seems like it was yesterday. So much has happened since that event. We have been constantly in the news. And I'm not just talking about like we've always been, a little bit here, a little bit there. I mean crushing publicity. Well, it would crush lesser men. New York Times, Washington Post. Washington Post was mentioned us in three articles a few days ago. And everywhere in between, Mr. Rachel Maddow was talking about it. We didn't even get to cover that or play that clip. We can't even keep up with it all. So much has happened. And it's now you look at the date, October 1st, in 1 month, this whole thing ends. And it has been the most entertaining, the most
fun,
lively. No, it has been fun. It's been hard, but it's been fun. It's been lively. We've been in the middle of it. I am looking forward to some downtime in November when we just take it easy on the show for the first time in a long time. But it has gone by fast, and the end is near. And what happens over the course of the next 40 days in this country, America certainly at a crossroads. Which way will we go? We'll find out very soon.
I predict it ain't going to happen. By when I say it ain't going to happen, there's never been any downtime for the cesspool.
Well,
I would like it maybe for a day or two, but you know what? It'll get even hotter probably.
If Hillary wins, the persecution may ratchet up. If Trump wins, we may be packing our bags for Washington. Who knows? But
you know, you mentioned the hangar out there, son. Wasn't it electric? I mean, I have never been in a more electric atmosphere there. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that.
Oh, they're at that Trump rally, yeah?
Yeah, at the Trump rally. Like George Washington said, or Thomas Jefferson said, in matters of politics, speak to me not in confidence of men. At least, instead, let us bind them with the changes of the Constitution, lest they commit mischief. Well, Trump's no saint. No, there's never been a saint going all the way back to 700 years when this battle for liberty, when the English first started getting their law back there with the 1100 Charter of Liberties. We'll talk about that someday. But, you know, that being said, I think Trump is the best guy we've got going on. So, in fact, I even trust him more than Reagan. I did Reagan. I just hope he can recover, James, from this.
Well, this is the thing. Talking about recovery, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Pappy, but
you go ahead.
This thing is he was – universally panned in the press. And again, no matter how good he did, how poorly she did, even if Lester Holt hadn't been completely in the tank for her and asked fair questions of each, the media would have written the exact same thing. I joked last month that the media has already written their stories about the winner of the debate. They're just waiting to publish them. So that was going to happen. But the dip was not substantial. It was 1 or 2 points according to some polls. But in the LA Times polls, he actually went up 2 points. In the Rear Clear Politics average of all polls, I think he went down about 2 or 3 percentage points. Okay. 2 or 3 fractions of a percent, I should say. Three-tenths of a percent, let me put it that way. He went down 0.3% overall. And so that's not that bad at all, considering. And now he has this experience under his belt. He's a fast learner, obviously, very smart guy. You can't make it in Manhattan real estate unless you're a shark and you're a –
especially a Gentile.
Exactly.
A Gentile up there, you know where he is? I'm going to quote Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson said he's in the middle of Hinetown. Now, we didn't say that.
That was Jesse Jackson.
But, you know, that was right. But you know what? He needs to come out. He needs to go.
Well, he's got that experience now. I think he's going
to
do things
differently. Well, he needs to go with a girl who brung you to the dance. He needs to go back and, like one of his counselors he had that they got rid of, They need to let Trump be Trump. He needs to go in there and not just take the gloves off. He needs to put brass knucks on. You know, I don't care if she is a woman. He needs to come out and go for the kill. He needs to go for the carotid artery. He needs to just ripping heads off, verbally, of course. He needs to tear her up. Be Trump. Trump, be Trump. That you were Trump when you were here in the hangar in Millington back in February, like James said. Be Trump, man.
So a poll came out talking about polls, and this gets back to the us versus them mentality. Donald Trump leads by 60 points. 60 points. That's 80 to 20 for those math scholars at home. 80 to 20 in white males without a college degree. 80 to 20 he leads. So I think it's safe to say he's got our people wrapped up. And I'm not just talking about not having a college
degree.
People
that work.
The people that work. Yes, work right. The people that really work.
Carpenters, the plumbers.
And so he's got that. So, of course, Hillary's got 90% of the blacks. She's got all of the illegal aliens, most of the Jews, and
she's got
homosexuals.
99% of the big banks and the big industry. Not one big bank.
100% of the media.
Of. Yeah.
So, but it just goes to show. And he referred to Barack Obama in that debate as her president. Now, I thought that was could have been telling. Could have been, but maybe not. Because they're both Democrats. I'm sure that's what he was referring to. But nevertheless, this is it. And so whites still have the power to control this election. My question is, what in the world is wrong with that other 20% of whites? How could any working class white male vote for Hillary Clinton?
Will Blass down here on the
maybe they just got it wrong and they didn't understand the question. But nevertheless, how could any white person of any educational stripe vote for Hillary? I just don't get it.
Well, they got a reprobate person, a personality. There's people like down here in Midtown that are, you know, the gay and lesbian and transvestite. They got a new thing now called. Let me ask you a question, James. I don't consider myself naive. What is non-binary? If you're,
I can't derail into that. I don't know. They've got all of these new
that's
terms.
That's the crowd. That's
and one of these major newspapers, there's something like 50 some odd genders now that you can choose from. It's not male and female. There's that and about 47 others.
Those are the ones supporting Hillary.
Well, even those people.
White male that are
those
Hillary.
People, homosexuals are still less than, clearly less than 10% of the population. She gets all of that. It's still going to be white people, normal white people, that are going to put her over if she wins. But anyway, I was talking to Sam Bushman on Tuesday. So we had this first hour where Sam was featured as our guest to break down the debate. And I mentioned during that hour that Sam and I talked on Tuesday morning. We were sharing with one another our takeaways from the presidential debate, which, of course, was on Monday night, last Monday. I was browsing through articles later that day, astonished to find that the New York Post had posted something almost word for word recitation of what I had said to Sam on the phone. So I'm just going to read this. It's only four paragraphs, the snippet I'm going to read, because I couldn't have said it better myself. If you said, James, what was your take on the debates? I would have said this. And in fact, I think I did on the phone. And then the New York Times or whoever was tapping our conversation printed it. But this is it. And I said this the very night on Twitter when it was over. I said that was a draw. Even Charlie Krauthammer said in a draw, the consideration goes to the challenger. I said it was a draw. I said bad news for Clinton because she needed to turn the race around, and I didn't think she did that, even though Trump could have done much better, and we covered that in the first hour, all of those reasons. Clinton was on attack most of the night with the marked help of Lester Holt. Didn't score any real body blows on Trump, nor remotely offer a rationale for her candidacy beyond he's just too dangerous, which was a case I thought she failed to make. I'm going to wrap up my thoughts on this. We got a clip from Brother Nathaniel that's dynamite. He covers something
Nathaniel.
You know, we bring Brother Nathaniel on because he says some things.
He's our hitman.
He says some things because of who he is that we can't really say.
Well, he's a reformed Jew.
That's right. So he can.
God bless him.
No, he's great. We'll be back and we'll hear from him too.
I worry about my parents because I think smoking is going to harm them. I mean, it harms my mom. She coughs all the time. I'm just like, Mom, it's because of your smoking. But she's like, well, see, this is what you should look at. See me, I smoke and look at this. I'm just like, yeah, Mom, why don't you just try to quit?
Sometimes teenagers do know what they're talking about.
I've tried. I've brought them the little pamphlets that we get at school about not smoking. And I've like tossed it in front of them. I'm like, Mom, read this. We even got this thing from the American Cancer Society. It was this thing that you send around about not smoking because my mom sends those things out. And she's like, it's in here folding them up. And I was like, Mom, are you really going to send those out? And she's like, well, yeah. And I was like, well, isn't that a slight bit hypocritical? She says, no, I'm going to send them out. I was like, well, don't you see something? These people are trying so hard to get people not to smoke. She was just like, well, I know it's wrong, and I know it's going to harm me, but it hasn't harmed me yet.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Okay, so obviously the theme of tonight's show is the political cesspool's post-debate analysis. I'm going to finish my thoughts on this, then we're going to turn it over and find out what Matt the Copperhead, our friend and correspondent, has to say about it. But I said ultimately I thought it was a draw, which I thought favored Trump, even though he could have done so much better. I certainly was deflated by the end of the night because I thought that he could have just done a lot better. But ultimately, I don't think Hillary really distanced herself from Trump very much. Nobody blows. She didn't offer any reason to vote for her other than she's not Trump. I thought Trump wasted a lot of time on pointless defense of basically irrelevant issues, as we covered in the first hour, the birther stuff, his taxes. That was another thing they talked about over and over. Why don't you release your taxes? Your taxes, your taxes, your taxes. And then, of course, Hillary's sitting on 30,000 confidential emails that have been leaked and stolen, and God knows what. No questions asked about that, though. But he didn't come off as the maniac that she needs him to be, nor that the press has portrayed him to be. New to this game, yes, he came across as that, but not too volatile, which has been the narrative. And while he failed to hit on some obvious openings, no mention of her email follies when asked about cybersecurity, for instance, he did hit hard on the fact that she's been around forever without actually ever doing anything. Talking about she's been there for 30 years and not been a contributor to any solutions, so why would we expect it to change when she's president? That's good. Indeed, I thought that Trump won the opening round on trade during that debate because he actually had credible ideas on creating jobs, better deals on trade, lower taxes on businesses, less deadening regulation, etc., while she offered nothing beyond social justice thoughts such as equal pay, sick leave, tax the rich to pay for it all, etc. Donald Trump remained at the end of the night the candidate of change, while Hillary is the tribune of the establishment status quo. So a lot of that was in the New York Post. That's exactly what I told Sam Bushman on Tuesday morning. So that's my take on the debate. Let's find out the Copperheads. Matt, you're a native New Yorker, and that debate, of course, happened up there in your stomping grounds. Your reaction while watching it, and then now that you've had some time to reflect on it.
Well, first of all, James and Eddie, how you doing, brothers? It's Matt the Copperhead.
Doing great, Copperhead.
Hey, my man, you know, if I could just go back and harken back to a time when you had all four of us at the in Millington, Tennessee, in that hangar, and the energy that you feel was just amazing. I mean,
well, think about this
too. That can compare. There's nothing that can compare to that. What's happened?
And not only were we all together, but of course, if people go back and listen to that broadcast, it was the last broadcast for the political cesspool that we did during the month of February this year, last Saturday in February. Of course, in addition to being there together and enjoying that atmosphere, that energy, and that camaraderie, while Trump was speaking throughout the entire duration of his speech, I was broadcasting live from his press pen, surrounded by the establishment clown media. Sam Bushman was in studio anchoring the show while I was broadcasting remotely. He was guest hosting while I was broadcasting from that event. So you had a live political cesspool show going on simultaneously while Trump was speaking about 20 feet away, and I was breaking down to the audience what I was hearing Trump say in real time. That was a really amazing night. And, of course, the press is still reporting on it.
And I met Copperhead. Copperhead proved a white man can jump. A proud white man can jump for the occasion to get some liberal, you know, some Mama Luke liberal kind of lost some signage there. But that was.
Hey, Copperhead, you remember me and you? We got interviewed on the side while James was doing a live broadcast. There was two different other news agencies. One of them interviewing you, one of them interviewing me.
I said, the last thing I told Eddie, I said, Eddie, whatever you do, don't give any interviews. Don't give any interviews. So I'm live on the air. I turn around and Eddie's sitting there with a gaggle of reporters around me. Anyway, we got to let the Copperhead talk. Go, Copperhead.
Oh, it was great. It was.
Hey, one more thing, Copperhead. Do you remember the sign?
Getting back to the debates, I'm tired of hearing about percentage points, who won. It doesn't matter. Even Trump, the individual, to me, is inconsequential at this point. A movement has started, a nationalist populist movement has started that cannot be ever put back into the bottle. And, you know, the cucks are defeated. You have the Democratic nominee for president telling us that we've taken over the Republican Party, and we truly have.
Well, you're right about that. Now, if we have to find silver linings, should Hillary be elected, there's going to be no shortage. Certainly things have changed this year that are not going to change back. We are infinitely better positioned in terms of the power this radio show exudes, the power of the alt-right. So many things have happened this year. If you could look back a year and a half ago and say, well, it's going to be Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton. We don't have a dog in the fight. Nothing's going to change. You know, certainly that was the reality that we were faced with before Trump came down that escalator in July of 2015. So even if he loses, and I'm not just saying this to hedge my bet, even if he loses, we are uniquely better positioned than we would have been otherwise. There are many things that we can celebrate no matter what happens in November, but certainly I'd be lying to you and everyone else in the audience if I said it wouldn't be infinitely better if he won. Go, Eddie.
You know, there's one thing we should have mentioned. I should have asked Sam while we had him on the air. And one of the wild cards we have to worry about is the United Nations takeover of the Internet. I've been hearing that it's getting ready to happen. I don't have a lot of information on that. I'm sure Sam does. Have you heard anything about that, Copperhead?
Well, I know we gave up control of somewhat of the regulations last night. And as far as the, what do they call it, the usernames and the, if you set up a UAL or
URL,
I'm not a very technical person, but I'm, you know, here's my thing. You know, this all goes back to national. This was invented in the United States, researched, funded. It's just like so many things that are born here of our people that get actually implemented overseas. And, you know, it doesn't bode well. You know, I understand a lot, you know, having cousins in Europe and everything, having talked to me in the past and trying to, you know, explain this issue a little bit better. You know, anytime we give up anything, you know, for free, no cost, then, by the way, no one else in the world does. There's not one country, one nation, one people that just freely gives anything up. You know,
well,
Guatemala's charging us for bananas, right?
Yeah. You know, Matt, one thing I was kind of concerned about is the actual takeover and the complete control of the internet and the running and the getting rid of people like the political cesspool, like, you know, Prison
right.
Planet, like, you know, like, what's her name? Out of the Power Hour, Joyce Riley, you know, the Power Hour. I mean, you name it, any alternative media resource, I'm hearing that it's getting ready to get rid of them. I mean, I don't know. I like to get some more information.
How many offices around this country now where people go to their 9-to-5? You can't even type in the political cesspool. Your screen will go blank. How many, I mean, forget about the political cesspool, you know, other people within our beautiful movement. You type in the NRA, you can't get it. It shuts down. So, yes, will this probably have an adverse effect on free speech? Without a doubt. But we all know who's behind this, who's ultimately pushing this forward. You know, the same people that spend millions of our money, because they're not funding it themselves, but they're doing the research, they're developing this software. You don't have to look very far. You know, another, you know, look at the ADL and the software they've created.
You know, that begs the question, do we have anybody in our movement, in, you know, in our brotherhood, so to speak, that has the deep pockets of a George Soros?
I can tell you we do.
You know, do we have anybody that can that we can come up? And
those
we can
people
do it
come
run.
Once you take power, and you don't get power by asking
That's
for
right.
it. You don't get power by waiting for it to fall into your lap. You have to take power, and once you take power, all of that other stuff comes.
Jock Ewing, Dallas, by about 1982.
That's right. You're absolutely right, James. That's what's going to happen.
You said that.
What has happened is the awakening of blood and soil, true blood and soil patriots of this country are awake.
Yamamoto said the same thing. Admiral Yamamoto, the Imperial Japanese Navy, said that he feared all we have done with bomb Pearl Harbor was awakening a giant with a fearful resignation.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Matt. Thanks for the call. When we come back, we're going to play that Brother Nathaniel clip. And then in the third hour, it's hard to believe how fast even tonight's going by. In the third hour, we've got something very special for you. Very, very special. Stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
This hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Revelations of pervasive warrantless eavesdropping on phone and computer communications have led to increased consumer demand for encryption features that would protect privacy. Google responded with a new app called Allo, which promised users end-to-end encryption as well as transient storage of confidential messages. NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose disclosures helped generate public demand for privacy enhancements, has warned that Allo is precisely the opposite. According to Snowden, it is nothing less than a Google app that records every message you ever send and makes it available to police upon request. Last year, Snowden points out, the top secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which reviews federal applications for electronic surveillance, approved every request submitted to it. Those rulings, he explained, would cover Allo. The Free Thought Project notes that on the same day Google introduced the app, it also announced drastic anti-privacy changes to the program. When users remember to begin a conversation in incognito mode, as can be done for Google searches, their conversations won't be stored indefinitely, as it still provides end-to-end encryption, but conversations not expressly begun that way will be stored forever, where they could be available for any law enforcement body requesting the information. If you want a win-win-win opportunity for patriots, think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's WorldAffairsBrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support.
go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, The Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Another takeaway from the debate, or something that certainly caught my attention, was the fact that, again, you have six segments, the two candidates, half of it devoted to just utter nonsense, and then you had at least 15 minutes of it, of them talking about what they were going to do for blacks. So on the one hand, the media will tell you that race doesn't exist, race is a social construct, et cetera, et cetera. But then they're certainly quick to designate race when it comes to what you can do for blacks. So rather than stick with and be consistent with their narrative that race is a social construct and race doesn't exist, why not just ask them, what are you going to do to make America better? What are you going to do to make this country better for all Americans? But no, they specifically say, what are you going to do to address criminal justice reform, which basically just means let the thugs run the prisons. And, you know, Trump played the game a little bit on that. Let's be frank. Hillary played it a lot worse. But they both made mention of exactly what they were going to do to help that 13% of the population that's black. There wasn't much time spent, obviously, on what they're going to do to help the 60-plus percent that's white. I didn't hear anything about that, nor have I ever. But that was just another thing to ponder in our post-debate analysis tonight on the political cesspool. But we have another caller, Cody from the Confederacy. So, you know, this is going to be a good call.
If he can sing Dixie.
Well, any Confederate can, Eddie. Cody, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, what can we do for you, brother?
Yes, sir, I was going to tell you, great show tonight, guys. I want to tell y'all, I liked it. When I heard Hillary, you looked pretty. When you perjured yourself, I almost let the field get too hot. It was funny. I laughed on the ground.
Well, we have a good time laughing together, too, on the air and during commercials.
Yes, it was great. And another one I like I was thinking of Donald Trump could do in the debates. One-word responses, like when Hillary says something, like, you know, when she says something about security, cybersecurity, you know, like emails, bathroom, or when she says something, you know, along the lines of, that Donald Trump's mean to women or something, you just say, Juanita Bodrick, you know, or if she's, you know, opens her mouth about being something, just how about Benghazi, you know, and just this with his look on his face and just say those one word responses.
That's good.
The crowd go with that. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, that's interesting you bring that up. First of all, I think that's brilliant. And he has that facial demeanor that can really pull off something like that, that a lot of people couldn't if they were trying to do it. And they don't have the talent and charisma to be funny like that.
That's what I was thinking. That's great.
But, and he had actually, of course, the audience was commanded to be stone silent, as if they were in a library, not a word, not an utterance, not an applause. He actually had two or three, within the first 20 or 30 minutes of the debate, he had two or three boisterous responses of laughter from the audience, who was, again, instructed to be quiet.
Yeah.
He had a couple of laughs at her expense.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just saying he elicited a few laughs at Hillary's expense during the early parts of that debate, and I thought that was quite telling, considering that the audience was told to be quiet, and it certainly wasn't an audience that just wandered in off the streets that was part of one of his rallies. These were hand-selected people, and he had them in the palm of his hand early until Lester got her back on track.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I thought that was really telling at the first time, and if Donald would have just went with Donald, you know, I think it would have been great.
I think he should have just purposely not answered the inane questions that
that came up later on and just said, listen, you can talk about the birth certificate. You can talk about my taxes. Let's talk about what we're going to do for the American people. Let's talk about immigration. And just don't answer it. Don't answer it because it was just made to make him take a fall. There was no way he could have won that, no matter how he answered.
I wish when Lester would have asked him that, I would have said, oh, that's beneath the office that I'm about to hold.
There was a lot of ways he could have handled it. I think he'll handle it better in rounds two and three. And that's the thing. And let me reiterate that no one will remember the first debate after the second one. And they certainly won't remember it after the third one. And so if you're going to take a lick, I'd rather take it in the early rounds and then land the haymaker at the end of the fight. So we'll take that. Well, thank you so much for the call and for the support, Cody.
One more thing real quick, if I can is there any way, if we donate to the Political Cesspool, can we get a autographed copy of the Racism Smashism? Will y'all do that?
That's the easiest thing you could ever ask, and I would be happy to do it. We've got copies in studio right now. So if you just send me an email and an address, we'll take care of that.
Thank you, James. You're a great show,
hey, Cody.
And y'all keep doing what you're
doing. Hey, Cody, don't hang up yet, brother. Hey, Cody, where are you from, son? I'm Eddie Miller right here.
Texas.
Oh, you're in Memphis?
No, Texas.
Oh, Texas. Okay, guess what? I saw something. I really got thrilled when you said you're a Confederate. I saw something today I hadn't seen in a long time. I'm going on 70 years old, and back in my day, half the diesel tractor trailer rigs on the interstate, well, we didn't have interstates in those days, but on the road, they would have these big, huge Confederate flags on the radiator, you know. Today, you seldom ever see a Confederate battle flag, but I just thought I'd let you know, maybe enlighten you, make you feel good. I saw two, not one today, James and Cody, I saw two pickup trucks within a matter of 10 minutes on the interstate, and both of them were flying the great battle flag.
There you go.
Yeah, man. Are
you still seeing
one on my front porch right now? I have one on my front porch right now that everybody can see.
God bless you, Cody.
I just picked one up. We bring one to work every night. Absolutely. Right. Hey, God bless you, Cody. Thank you so much.
I will. I'll send you that email too, James. Thank you, sir.
I'll be waiting for it, and we'll get you the book. Thank you. Least we can do for our fans. And, in fact, that is what we're going to be spending the third hour on. It's going to be a very interesting, uplifting third hour. We are going to go through some mail that is just incredible, and we haven't had the time to do it all year. We have not had the time to do it all year. This has been I was writing to a friend this week, and it was just a quick recap, but typically what we do in any given fundraising drive is we like to shout out and give acknowledgement to not the people, because we don't want to out anyone and say names on the radio. Some people like to maintain their privacy. But we like to give acknowledgement from the cities that these people live in, that they're donating from. And typically every fundraising drive, we do the quarterly fundraisers. Our third quarter fundraising drive just wrapped up yesterday. And so we just are on the backside of that one. And what we like to do is shout out the names of the cities where we're receiving our support from, as many as we can. And we do that every fundraising drive. We've not been able to do that at all this year, not once this year, because of everything that's been happening with this show. We only have 3 hours a week to respond to everything that's going on. We are in the middle of a presidential race where we actually have a dog in the fight. We're under constant attack from the press. And so we have just been not sidetracked. We certainly wanted to do it, but we've just been too busy. There has not been a free moment to breathe, not catch air or get ahead or even get our heads above water. And I was writing to someone just some of the highlights from this year since March. So we had that campaign rally in March where we did the live remote simulcast of the political cesspool from the Trump rally, created a media firestorm after we interviewed Donald Trump Jr. We filed a lawsuit against a major American newspaper that's still working its way through the legal system. Then we were back up at the Republican National Convention. Hillary Clinton singled us out, said that James Edwards would be one of the people that would be running the country in a Trump administration. Then, of course, another round of publicity just in the last few days from many, many, many national outlets. It has been a hectic year, constant attack. This is our duty, of course, and we're happy to be in the middle of this thing. We're happy to be the voice of our people, to be involved in, be considered to be a difference maker in the presidential campaign. Of course, earlier this year, we were listed as one of the top 20 right-wing media fixtures responsible for Trump. Can you imagine? Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity,
Ann Coulter, the political cesspool. We were mentioned in the same breath as these people, and folks, you made that happen. And so in the third hour, it's been the busiest year of our broadcasting career by far. But in the third hour, we're going to read some mail. I showed this to Eddie during the commercial break. I got a stack of papers that I can barely fit my hands around. Handwritten notes, cards, emails, signed letters, all sorts of correspondence. And we're going to read a few of those because the rest of this year after tonight is going to be a sprint to the finish. And so we are purposefully going to carve out 1 hour, the last hour of tonight's show, and we are going to read off some of the cities that have sent in support just in the month of September and read some of these letters. And I think it's going to be as heartwarming for you as it has been for us. I get a lot of emails, actually, when we used to do this, and we did it every time until this year because we've been, again, so busy. But people say it really emboldens them and boosts their morale to see how many people are tuned into this show, contributing to this show, and sharing with us their thoughts, which we're going to pass on to the audience at large. And I think it's heartwarming for everybody. Very quick, Eddie.
Well, you know, James, I love handwritten notes. As the audience may know, I first got in contact with James, I was 19 years old, through a handwritten note. I'm really emotional. I love the handwritten notes. I write it myself.
We wouldn't know each other if it wasn't for a handwritten note Eddie left on the door of my campaign headquarters in 2002 when I was writing for state rep. Who would have thought we would come this far and be on the radio? We'll be back right after this.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Staying the time longer to what we've got, girl. Little red world, girl, we got.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, gang, we are going to play very quickly. We're wrapping up our post-debate analysis, and we're taking some calls. We don't always open up the phones, but we're taking some calls tonight. And then in the third hour, it's going to be an ode to the audience. And you're going to want to hear what your fellow political cesspool listeners think and say and what's in their hearts and minds. And we're going to share that. We're going to take an hour to do that in the third hour because I think it's important. And again, I know it boosts the morale of our audience out there to know how many people are tuned in with you every Saturday night and in the broadcast archives. But let's first wrap up our post-debate analysis with Brother Nathaniel's take right now, and then we'll take another call.
If there's one takeaway from the first debate, it's this. Why was Trump asked the hostile questions and not Hillary?
Good morning, Mr. Trump.
Good morning.
So how did you think it went last night?
I thought it went really well. I mean, I had some hostile questions.
You bet he did. And in calculated bias succession.
Mr. Trump, we're talking about the burden that Americans have to pay, yet you have not released your tax returns. Mr. Trump, for 5 years, you perpetuated a false claim that the nation's first black president was not a natural-born citizen. Mr. Trump, a lot of these are judgment questions. You had supported the war in Iraq before the invasion. What makes your judgment?
I did not support the war in Iraq.
2002.
That is a mainstream media nonsense put out by her. Because she, frankly, I think the best person in her campaign is mainstream media.
My question is, why is your judgment?
Wait a minute.
But was Hillary attacked by Holt? Not a peep.
Do you feel that Lester Holt asked Hillary Clinton an equal number of hostile questions?
Well, he didn't ask her about the emails at all. He didn't ask her about her scandals. He didn't ask her about the Benghazi deal that she destroyed. He didn't ask her about a lot of things that she should have been asked about. I mean, you know, there's no question about it.
Why do you think that is? Didn't ask about her foundation.
Why? I don't know.
Because it was rigged from the beginning. That's why. First of all, Clinton's podium was customized to give her a large look. Match that with her red pantsuit, streaked blonde hairdo, and lots of makeup, making her look like a political Barbie doll. And as far as Hillary was concerned, the debate wasn't about policies, but who was the slyest of them all.
Did anybody see that debate last night? Oh, yes. One down, two to go.
But what nobody's asking is why the establishment, led by the Jewish-owned media, wants to see Trump discredited and destroyed. What are they afraid of? Trump's a maverick, a bull in a china shop, unpredictable, and that makes the Jews who frame the narration very nervous. Trump could be uncontrollable as president while Clinton is already knee-deep in the establishment's pocket. Her billionaire donors all belong to the same synagogue. Soros, Sabin, Spielberg, to name just a few of her donating Jews. Match that with the sponsors of the first debate, Robert Iger and Alan Braverman, ABC's principal shareholders, and you've got a kosher-approved Barbie doll puppet for president. And what better way to kick off the debates than to let the Jewish-owned ABC get the first digs into Trump?
All right, we have interviewed so many notable personalities, celebrities, elected officials, authors, pundits, heroes. And Brother Nathaniel's just right up there at the very top in terms of guests that I have enjoyed interviewing. Really, probably our most colorful guest we've ever had on. He just has this charisma and this delivery that makes him a joy for radio. I know he was one of Bill Roland's favorite guests also. I was talking to Brother Nathaniel or exchanging correspondence with him this week. We're going to have him back on soon. But he does these videos, which are so spot on and good that we can just play his videos and save him a phone call. And so it's always nice. And we feature his videos pretty regularly on this show, at least the audio part of them. And that was his take on the debate. And, of course, it's hard to argue with any of that. And with that, that'll pretty much wrap up our post-debate analysis of the first presidential debate. Two more to come in pretty short order.
and we will get to those in due time.
James, one point we need to make in case there are some of our listeners out there, new listeners that do not know, Brother Nathaniel was a Brooklyn-born Jew, Orthodox Jew, who he converted over to Christianity. So no one can call him.
And he didn't just convert to Christianity as part of the apostate church. He is an Orthodox, hardcore Christian, and he was born into an Orthodox Jewish family. And he actually, the last time he was on, which was November of last year, he gave us his testimony. It was really, that interview really sticks out to me. We've done thousands and thousands of hours of radio. Go back to November 2015 in the archives. Listen to the last interview that we did with Brother Nathaniel live on this show. Now, we've featured a lot of his content on here since then, but Eddie and I did that interview. Great stuff. Anyway, let's go to Jay, who is part of Jim Lancia's crew on his YouTube show, Cop Shootout. Of course, Jim Lancia is our criminal justice correspondent here on the Political Cesspool, author of the book Downtown White Police. Regularly on the program. Jay is working with him on that YouTube endeavor, and Jay's called in before and is always a great call. Jay, what can we do for you?
Something that I have noticed that I would like to bring to your guys' attention is right before the debate, when you did your show where you were talking about how the mainstream media, how they were attacking you, but you weren't, there wasn't fear in your voice, there was an excitement. But there was something strange that was happening. I was noticing it was everybody was on the field. Everybody was out. We were victorious. Everything was great. And there was this fog over people, a confusion that I saw. And when I say everybody, I include this as I kind of view you guys as officers. I would actually include you as probably our highest officer. You're our command, the lead. You have the biggest connections. You've been in this the longest. You're welcoming to everybody in the community. Everyone that's been around, and, you know, if guys like the TRS guys are, you know, lieutenants on their own front, we are still all a united front of this alt-right, this movement, sure, fighting. And something that in this confusion happened, and then when Trump came, and he didn't do as good as we all hoped, I saw something that it was identical to what happened after the first Battle of Bull Run in the Confederate, in the war. When we first faced the Union, we whooped them, and we sent them from the field of battle in confusion and panic and disorganization back to Washington. And the one thing we had in common with Union soldiers at that time is that we, as the Confederates, were just as confused and disorderly by the fog of war, by the victory. We've already achieved a major victory. We occupied the high ground. We sent the left. We sent all the mainstream media running, scared. And the Trump might have been the inspiration to that, but the men and women, the viewers, the regular soldiers fought to achieve it. But when Trump didn't do as good, it was kind of like watching the whole line was charging horses, everything, and then all of a sudden everything came to a stop and everybody was silent. And it showed that layer of, you guys have been in this longer than me. I've been awake for 7-8 years, but I've never seen anything like this. And I talked to all older guys, I go, I've never seen necessarily anything like this either. This is a huge victory. We've already achieved a great victory. And at the same at the Battle of Bull Run, what the generals got together and Lee and all of them, they noticed, they looked at it and they said, what happened? And then he didn't fault the officers for it, but he said the officers, there was disorganization. It was our first fight. Yeah, we were victorious, but the officers did not halt the men. Trump not doing this goes kind of like the enemy, the Union turning around and running a counterattack, and the men saw it coming, they got scared. And they didn't get too far advanced. But it also shows a level of danger that if Hillary gets elected or Trump doesn't achieve what we think he's going to do, it is up to men like you, it is up to these you officers to be ready, just like Forrest was. The reason why Forrest could show up and split his forces in half and charge in both directions wasn't because he was reckless, it's because he ran the whole battlefield. He saw it all in his mind. Forrest had dispatches. He ran his own intelligence organization. He had to know not only where the enemy was, but where the enemy wasn't. So we could do this. And he had put that on the other men. The other men were inspired to fight, but they had to bring them back. And that's kind of similar to something I noticed. And I just wanted to add that in, that you guys are doing a wonderful thing. But the defeatism, the pessimism that we had for so long is still in a lot of these guys. And if Hillary doesn't turn out, Trump doesn't, I hope you guys are ready for the next plan, the next thing to move, to just so it doesn't even seem like it's a big deal. Because when the enemy would do something unexpected for us, he was ready. He would move his troops to the opposite direction, And it didn't even look, he was ready for it. So the men, as far as they're concerned, nothing bad ever happened. Force left Lance. And I hate to put something like that on you guys, but you got to. And I really feel like a Lance Corporal trying to talk up to the generals at something like this. But
hey, you give us maybe too much credit. I mean, we've been here for 12 years. I'm very proud of our portfolio and the battles we fought, the scars that we share. But let me tell you something, brother. We don't exist without men like you in the audience. And so whatever inspiration you draw from us, we draw twice as much from you. But I appreciate you saying that. And I really appreciate the analogy, obviously. And of course, we remarked this year, we've been attacked on all fronts by the establishment press, by Hillary Clinton, and then on the other flank from the Southern Baptist Convention, and the only solution is to charge in both directions, as Stonewall Jackson said. I will tell you this, no matter what happens on November 8th, on November 9th, the political cesspool will be here as we have been for the last 12 years. We will be here without retreat, surrender, or apologies. We will be here ready to lead, and we will find a way forward no matter what situation or circumstances are presented to us. We will continue to do what we've always done to the very best of our abilities. And I think what we've always done with the support of our audience, which we'll be talking about in the third hour, has catapulted us into the conversation where we have affected this presidential race. At least the media believes we have, and I'll believe them on this one time. And so we'll be there no matter what, and we'll be there, and we'll lead to the best of our abilities. But thank you so much for the call. That was a very important call that I enjoyed quite a bit. Thank you, Jay, and thank you for everything you're doing with Jim in your own regards. We appreciate it. We'll be back, folks.